This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Morning Run. You're with Julian Lin and Xiaoning. Now, the Philippines had their midterm elections yesterday, and the early results show that President Rodrigo Duterte allies have taken 11 of the 12 Senate seats up for grabs, with only one seat going to the opposition.
Yes, so voting day saw issues like vote counting machines malfunctioning and alleged incidences of vote buying, which, by the way, Duterte has called an integral part of an election. 61 million people from more than 7,000 islands were registered to vote in the provincial, city and national polls.
The key battle is for control of the Senate, the upper house of parliament, where President Duterte did not have a majority in prior to the midterms. Now, despite criticisms against him, like his drug war, which has killed thousands, and suppression of press freedom, he remains very popular.
Yeah, so it's quite, this is what's quite interesting as well about this round of elections is that three of Duterte's children are running for political seats. And so far, it seems that they've all won their races in Davao, where Duterte has held power since the 1980s. So his eldest son, Paulo Duterte, won in his bid for the first legislative district seat of Davao City. Sebastian Duterte was unopposed in the race for vice mayor. And Duterte's daughter, Sara, is set to be the next mayor of Davao with an over 500,000 voter lead. And she's also tipped to be her father's potential successor in 2022.
And for some insights on a takeaway of this midterm elections in the Philippines, let's turn to Dr. Aris Arugay, Associate Professor of the Political Science at the University of Philippines, Diliman. Good morning and thank you for joining us, Professor. What are your initial thoughts on the Philippines midterm elections?
Yeah, good morning. The elections in the Philippines yesterday really delivered in terms of the outcomes for the incumbent president. The latest count, it seems like there is no one from the official opposition that will likely make it to the 12 seats up for grabs in the Senate. What you have are about 9 of the candidates that the president endorsed that will likely win, and 3 more like independent, but some of them are supported partially of the president and his controversial policies. So you could really see a quashing and really a bitter defeat for a very fragmented opposition in the Philippines right now under Duterte.
And Professor, what is your assessment of the fairness of the election? I mean, there have been allegations of vote buying, which President Duterte does not seem to think much of.
Right. I mean, that has become, for a country that has had the most experience with elections in Asia, it is troubling to still have this practice of vote buying and patronage. But that comes with the territory of having weak political institutions and a personality style based of politics. So Duterte himself had no problems embracing this reality. And this has been going on for many decades. And partly to blame is, of course, the politicians themselves, who never transcended, it seems like, the way that they engage citizens that seem to be based more on clientelistic rather than programmatic approach.
What policies will this big win for Duterte allow him to push forward?
Right. You're talking about if he would really get 9 out of the 12 seats, his administration. You're talking about the supermajority in the Senate, meaning more than 50%.
Yes.
And that is critical in some of the major policy shifts that will likely happen in the next 3 years. And that includes the drive of Duterte, and he already campaigned this since 2016, to change the 1987 Constitution. That requires a supermajority on both chambers of Congress, in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. He couldn't do that in the first 3 years of his administration because the Senate was not controlled by a supermajority of his coalition. So that's one. But let me remind you that also, you need a supermajority in order for an impeachment process against the president to be successful. So in a way, this win of the administration for the Senate somehow not only promotes the likely legislative agenda of the president, but could likely protect him from checks and balances as well as attempts to make him accountable for some of his policies.
Professor, what do you make of Sara Duterte's decision to run for the mayorship of Davao? There has been some discussion over her being a possible successor to Duterte post-2022. What are your thoughts on this?
Right. I mean, this is the first elections when you have two lists of senatorial candidates that are endorsed by the same family, meaning President Duterte has his list that somehow overlaps, but not completely, with Sara Duterte. And it really tells you, given that almost nine, if I'm not mistaken, of the administration likely winners of the elections were also endorsed by Sara Duterte, it tells you the rising political influence and political capital of the daughter of the president. And running as mayor of Davao unopposed as a re-electionist, because she is incumbent mayor, is really telling you of her power in Davao City. However, it also tells you that that power has started to diffuse and spread across the country. And if regardless of, depending on what happens now until 2022, she's a likely contender. Simply because she bears the surname of her father. And that is not surprising in Philippine elections. We've had sons and daughters who became president because of their namesake. So this shouldn't surprise us at all.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. And that was Dr. Aris Arugay from the University of Philippines, Diliman. In other news, Malaysia is trying to strengthen bilateral ties with the Philippines further. This is a bilateral talk between the Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir and Philippines.
Yes, so that's going to be, I think, he said that trade between the two countries is increasing, but, you know, it's largely in favour of Malaysia. So there's still a lot of room for improvement. Now, Dr. Mahathir added that one of the main areas needing to be enhanced was economic development as well as connectivity.
Yeah, I think the focus would probably be on sectors like healthcare, which they are trying. The government, Malaysian government, is going to sign an MOU between the government of Malaysia and Philippines. And actually, because Malaysia actually has been a healthcare destination for the Philippines, it's back to the medical tourism. If we look at the medical tourism in Malaysia, we are only just at the nascent stage compared to Singapore, and our cost is much lower. So I can see the appeal for Filipinos coming here for medical treatment. And surprisingly, actually, medical health in Philippines is extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it makes sense.
But I think Philippines also has other advantage, and one of those up-and-coming nations in ASEAN. They have a huge swath of foreign workers sending home a lot of remittances to the country. There is also an outsourcing centre as well, right?
Actually, if you want to look at the health of the Filipino economy, one of the data points to track is annual remittances or monthly remittances. Because remittances in Philippines are immediately flowed straight into the economy. It's all used for consumption.
Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.